Welcome to the Horsebeat Chronicles. This is a journey of getting to know horses outside the box. Join us as we see horses from their perspective as prey animals with the same social needs as us. I'm Laura Wilsey, co-creative Horsebeak, and I'm here with PJ Rossi, who is one of our educator, practitioners, and cohort on the mission of helping talk about Horsebeak. And the members of Horsebeak are on a journey to educate enthusiasts about horses based on repeatable, learnable, and teachable observation skills and body language mechanics. So welcome to the show, everybody. Thank you, PJ, for being here with me again today.
Hey, Laura. It's so nice to be here with you. It's such an honor to be sharing my experiences on this Horsebeak journey.
Thank you. You've been with us since basically the beginning, soon after the book came out in 2017, and haven't actually left. So we're just so pleased that you've loved Horsebeak so much that you've dedicated so much time and resources to be a part of this education system that Sharon and I have developed over the last, 7 years since the book was released in 2016.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be sharing back out a lot of the things that I have learned. It's an important thing to be out on the planet.
Yeah, for sure. And during this episode, we're actually going to talk a little bit about what is Horsebeak, because this is a topic that, through the years, we've been really thinking about and feeling into just those words themselves, Horsebeak. And to a person, you may be just like, yeah, we teach Horsebeak. They're like, there isn't a true definition of what that term means by just those words. And from a business standpoint and from an educational standpoint, we finally, through a lot of help from our marketing team, have been able to develop this great acronym of PEBLES. So precise equine body language skills. And that's what we're teaching and that's what we're learning. And it's both sides of the coin, because it's about precise equine body language or nonverbal language that the horses are doing with each other. And then the skills that we can ascertain to be able to have conversations with them. And we can be as precise as horses are to ask a horse, hey, I would like you to go over there. And I don't have a lead rope or a whip or anything. I can just use my gestures and my posture with my hands and give them the right signal to be able to do that from a distance as well as up close and in their bubble of personal space.
Yeah. And you know, Laura, when we talk about the nonverbal language system of horses and our learning and emulating it being in the precise equine body language skills, they like us to be as precise as we can, because of course, that's where clarity is built and better understanding, so we can move more safely together or be more safely together. And these are not necessarily tools that we have, but skills that we're building. And it's wonderful, after we've progressed a little bit in our skill learning, to have to be in a situation where our horse gets triggered by something and they might start to flight or they might start to pin their ears to do something. And we have skills built that we can drop right into to say to the horse in their own, emulating their own body language, that they're safe, that they don't need to progress to a larger behavior. And that's really what horses are looking for. They're looking for another being, whether it's a mentor, teacher, protector, horse, which we'll talk about those terms as we move on through our podcast. But if we in ourselves can have the skills built to be able to intervene when a horse is becoming dysregulated and moving into a behavior that is not safe, then we drop into that in the moment and we can have a safer and better relationship on both ends. It's better for us and it's better for the horse as well.
Yeah. And I mean, that is such a great point. And the observation skills is so important to the learning of this language, because body language in the horse world has been around for years. And so it's not a new term, but the nonverbal language of horse speak, which is a term similar to, like, if you say German or French, so that we are using, basically, when Sharon wrote this book, she, Horse Speak, the Equine Human Translation Guide, she didn't actually realize that she was creating a language for humans to learn, not, and also defining the language of how horses are communicating with each other. So we've been able to come up with some catchy phrases and things that more in lingo so that people can remember this language. Like, for example, turnkey, come to me. Literally, like turning a key in a lock, turning that key and drawing that posture and that gesture into your belly button, which creates what we call an O posture in your shoulders. So then you're kind of collapsing yourself and then drawing the energy into your belly button as a welcoming, similar to actually if you were, you know, kneeling down or bending down to invite a puppy or a dog into your bubble. You're like, hey, come on, come over here, do, do, do. And you would, you know, pat your thighs or something, but you would be bending down into an O-er posture versus X posture, which is more upright and your shoulders are back. And that's more of an energy that we, you know, a stopping energy, or I have a big bubble energy. So these little nuances that we help people, and that's really one of the goals about this podcast, is to help people understand how their body is talking, and that we can have precision in what we're doing in relationship to a completely different species and have conversations with them.
Yeah. Laura, I love what you said about, you know, Sharon in the beginning didn't really realize she was helping humans understand a different language system that does already exist on the planet. And sometimes I kind of think of her as being the Noam Chomsky for equines nonverbal language system, in that she's kind of discovered it and decoded it and invented ways to describe that language, even phrase structure, so that we humans can understand better how they use their own bodies in nonverbal language, and also how we actually do that. We humans have both verbal and nonverbal language. And you know that on the planet, there are more than 7,000 spoken languages. Wow. Not all of them are written, but there are more than 7,000 spoken languages. And as humans, I think we tend to forget how often, like when we speak, we use our hands, or we nod, or we bring our energy up, we bring our energy forward or back to say, I am excited to connect with you more, or I really would prefer not to connect with you more. But we do utilize that as well. And the horses see us as capable of emulating their body language. I think they're really always looking to connect with us. And when we start to offer them some of their gestures, postures, and signals of how they use their language, they are right there waiting to connect. I have an interesting story about someone I met a few weeks ago, and we were not in a place where we would be having a horse conversation, but somehow the topics came up, of course, and I told her that I am a horse speak practitioner and equine body language educator, and that horses have precise body language protocols, nonverbal body language protocols that they follow. For instance, in a greeting protocol, they greet muzzles, they move their head and neck away to discuss the importance of the safety of space in between, maybe to invite the other in or to say, that's too much, don't come in so close. And she relayed a story to me that she had been visiting a friend in another state, and her friend is a crossing guard for an elementary school. So she was kind of hanging out with her friend while she was spending her hour or so being the crossing guard for the school. And Some people are fortunate to live in this environment. There was a lady who was bringing the family horse to the school so her daughter could ride her horse home. And as my the person that I just met, she was saying, you know, I asked the lady if I could say hi to her horse. And for most humans, that means I'm going to pat the horse or however, as a human, we're going to say hi to a horse. But what she actually ended up doing, as she described to me, was I put my knuckles out. I just put my fist out to say hi to the horse. And she said she moved her head and her neck away from me, but I noticed that she was still looking at me. And she thought for a moment and she said to me, that's what that was. And so in retrospect of remembering her greeting with the horse, what she realized is that the horse reacted or responded to her muzzle knuckle greeting because the human's body language was close enough. It was not maybe precise, but it was close enough intuitively to a horse's type of greeting that this mare, started to engage with her in the greeting protocol. And she was amazed to recognize that she had actually done this with a horse and was surprised to learn that the horse responded in the way that she did, also intuitively or innately, because it's their language system. And it's just fascinating, I think, when we think about how, when we spend time with horses, we do have an intuitive sense of some body language. We know that if we want them to be soft, we be soft. And we know if we want them to have more energy, we might actually come up in our body energy, which sometimes ends up making us look like a predator and not really a partner. And that's a nuance that we can learn to modulate a little bit. But it is really interesting to, I find it really fascinating to be with people who are discovering this maybe for the first time, that they've been doing this all along, and now they can learn to speak the nonverbal language of equines with more intention. It's a bright spot in my day when that aha moment happens for people. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, the intention word is the key word that it really picked up on at this point. Because if people didn't have success with horses over all this time before opening the door to learning horse speak and understanding something a little bit different than you might have learned before, it's like we can be more intentional instead of, oh, I had this really cool experience with my horse on Tuesday and I loved it and it felt so good and everything came together. And then you're like, what did I do on Tuesday to actually have that experience? And so this is taking like the stuff that you're probably already doing with your horse and just hitting the enhance button and taking it to another level, because you can be more conscious about what you're doing instead of just relying on the subconscious decoding and encoding that has been happening. And that is the coolest thing. It's like, you know, in the Christmas story, they get you're looking for the decoder ring and you're trying to figure out that puzzle. Like horse speak does open the door to having all the puzzle pieces come together, because this work is repeatable and the horses are moving in patterns. And when you start seeing, if you take a couple horses or even one, and put them into an arena and watch them, most of the time, one of the horses is going to take the edge of the arena and walk around the edge as a protector and to check out to see. And what we say in horse speak is, are there any bees, bears, or boogeymen in this place? And to think about too is like, what we're trying to do is emulate the mama horse, because there's such a huge difference between the perspective of our species. And one of those perspectives is we're prey and predator, kind of, we're a little bit of both. You know, COVID kind of put us in that like prey mindset of other people, and get away from me because you might have, you know, this virus. And so with that, we see horses as when they hit the ground, immediately after they're born, they need to get up. And basically when we're born as a human, we're like, don't get up for about a year. All the food is going to come to you. And you just lay there and I'm going to carry you around and take care of you. Again, the horse hits the ground and mama needs to get that horse up, that baby foal up and moving, because that herd needs to start moving. They need to start going to another place for maybe more safety, because they need to be able to nurture this baby. But the baby is learning their language immediately. And we had this beautiful blessing to have gone to the Netherlands, where just a couple hours before we arrived to this wild conic herd, that there were two babies born. And so therefore they were close to the roadside, and they do have a caretaker who does, you know, make sure that everything goes smooth. She does her best to not intervene with anything, but there was seemed to be a complication, and the horses like knew where to go, where she would be. It was just incredible. And she said this does happen often when they're foaling, that they do come to the parking lot basically to, you know, to make sure that the horses can be checked out. So the bottom line was to be able to see how the herd was negotiating with, because the stallions did want to leave. They didn't want to stay in that place. They wanted to head back out into the backwoods. And so we watched the mama saying, we're not ready yet. And so it was so precise, and we could see the changes, where it took about an hour for them to negotiate with each other and with the baby. It was one of the mamas was brand new mama, so she hadn't had any experience, versus the other mama had more experience. So it, like I said, it took about an hour, hour and a half for the stallions and all the mares to get ready and to cross the road. And it was fascinating to see them negotiating with each other. And one of our mottos with Horsepeak is everything means something. And so taking into account that they are consciously communicating with each other is profound, because it's there's no accidents in what they're doing with each other.
You bring up a good point, Laura, about that being a wild conic herd. You know, as I'd mentioned, human species has over 7,000 different languages, dialects. I guess we don't know specifically about dialects and horses, but their nonverbal language system seems to be universal across equine species. And we call this horse speak, but really it is equine body language skills. And we see that wild herds of wild type horses, as in conics, Mustangs, wild or feral horses of other groups in different parts of the world, donkeys, mules, zebra. I know you and Sharon have had some encounters with zebra. I've had encounters with a couple of zebra in a zoo.
And one of our other students had an encounter with the zebras, and we have that on film. So, which it was amazing to see them be, I don't know if you had this experience with the zebra, but they were like, how did you learn that? And it actually made them a little bit angry. They're like, what? You're talking to me?
It felt to me like it brought a level of confusion, because it was unexpected that it felt a connection was felt. And you could see their, or I could see their attention level change. And it was almost with questioning and confusion, and then perhaps some frustration and maybe some anxiety that, you know, they're used to being looked at by people. And then here are some gestures, postures, signals, some, you know, emulating their micro gestures that actually meant something to them. And it was a little bit confusing for them that was could even happen. So, you know, it does seem to cross species of equines. I have a lot of deer on my property here in Colorado, and I do find that a lot of the gestures, postures, signals seem to mean something to the deer too. I can have a hold hand and my core off and walk past a deer at 30 feet and they remain where they are. So it does cross some other species too, but within equines, it seems to be universally conversive.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's kind of mammal speak, because even dogs and cats do similar type gesturing. It's a little bit different because they're predators, but Sharon had a conversation with a harbor seal, and there was just a lot of acknowledging. As being a podcast, you can't see me actually nodding the bridge of my nose up in the air as a question. And so, but that's one thing that animals do is if they're questioning something, they kind of nod their head up in the air. And we've actually been able to see this over and over again, specifically with during our club. We have a weekly club. We meet on Tuesdays at 1 and at 7. And what we do is actually feature our members' videos. And so people can send in horse on horse communication or human on horse communication. And we go over these videos, like stop action if you're watching a sports game. So we go backward, forward, and we literally hit the key to go forward frame by frame to see all these nuances that are happening. Because in the moment, the conversations are going by so quickly. So we do suggest get your camera, get a selfie stick, get some, or a tripod, get it some zip ties, and make a, you know, a little frame for yourself of where you're going to work with your horse and start filming yourself. Because during these videos, when we, you do take them apart, and Nyota is this little baby that we got to study over the winter, who was a fjord, and she was with 4 other fjords, mama, and then 2 aunties and an uncle. And it was so fascinating to see Nyota use the bridge of her nose for questioning. And even the question of in the air of like the environment or in communication with the other horse, but also questioning mama, hey, can I nurse now? And there was moments when Hallie, her mom, said, no, thank you. We can't nurse here right now, but we can do that soon. And so that is, I think, one big thing that we're teaching with horse speak that could be a little bit different than what you might have learned in the past, is that if the answer is like no, it could be not no forever. It's no, I'm not ready yet. And it might just take a little bit more time. And there's layers of different reasons why a horse would be not saying no, thank you in this moment. And we can, we'll go over that kind of stuff in the future too. But it was just so neat to be like, nope, we're not ready yet. Let's go over here to this environment on the edge where the other horses are. And then we can feel more protected. And now, Nyota, you can nurse. And so it was neat to be able to dissect these videos.
Yeah, really interesting, because when we're looking at those videos of mares and foals, it's such a pure version of the language, because the mama is teaching the baby at the same time. So she's giving direction and instruction and messages about safety and protection. And here's, you know, my bubble is this big and please stay within. And if the foal is very brazen and wants to pop out of the bubble and go do something else, we'll see the mare go collect the baby. And just to see the language system in such pure form is really, really interesting. So if any of you have opportunity to watch mares and foals or videos of mares and foals, it is super interesting. And to what you were saying, Laura, about the practice of understanding it, no, from your horse. If you ask them, you know, can we move 12 feet from the corner of the paddock to the other side of the paddock? And they seem to not want to walk with you. Well, why is that? You know, I like to kind of uncover and discover why I got a response from my horse that I got. And something that I've noticed even in my own horses, especially with my mares, like for instance, this morning, it got warm kind of quickly. She'd had her rain sheet on. So I went to take her rain sheet off and she walked away from me 3 steps and stopped. Mm-hmm. And so I walked with her where she was, stood at her shoulder, which is our, we'll talk about buttons later in future podcasts, but at our buddy up spot or our being together spot. And she looked at me and walked off three more steps. She was moving me to a place within her paddock where she wasn't near a fence. She wasn't near the other horse or the hay. She moved me to a spot where we had plenty of room surrounding both of us to remove the blanket. So she wasn't saying, no, I don't want you near me. She wasn't saying, no, thank you, I don't want my blanket off. She was saying, no, thank you, not right here. And I have a better idea of a place where I feel this would be safer to remove my blanket, because she knows I need to move around her on both sides and then it needs to get folded and lifted off. So it was very interesting to have had my experiences of understanding no thank you might not mean, like you said, permanently, forever, no thank you. It means not here, not at this moment, not in this spot, not in this way. And so we can ask again and we can ask again, and seeing the equine's micro gestures of how they're saying no thank you gives us a lot of information. And that's where just the beautiful conversation back and forth can happen. So I didn't say, what's the matter with you? Why don't you just stand still? I just need to take off your blanket. We do this all the time. You know what we're going to be doing.
Hurry up.
Right. And and sometimes that's where we might go. But I paused and I watched and she waited and she reconnected by looking back at me. I asked again, she moved again. So, and I understood that she was just getting to a place in the paddock that was not near anything else. She felt safe to be in the process of the blanket coming off, because as you know, you take them off in sections, right?
Yeah.
And it was just a lovely thing. And then we could check in afterwards and I could swish my hand like she might swish her tail. We could disconnect from that conversation and I go off to do other things and she goes off to eat some hay. And it was just a lovely, quiet, soft conversation about a thing that needed to get done, but in a way that made sense to both of us.
Yeah, I love that point about the location. The location mattered to her. We're not safe over here. You have things to do. You need, like, as a human, to unfold and, you know, take this blanket off, and you need to be able to get around her. And she's like, okay, well, I have a good idea. Let's just go over here a few steps and we can do that. And so, you know, being able to understand in that moment, like, she didn't do a hard tail swish and stomp her foot or be like pin her ears or anything. She's like, she probably even nodded her head. We're going to go forward a little bit, you know? So it's just like, it's really neat to be able to notice what happened before, what happened during the experience, and what happened after.
Right, because language is in context, right? Mm-hmm. And you bring up a very good point in when we are learning to see and our observational skills grow and we're really paying attention to the micro gestures, not just the big gestures of the horses, but the micro gestures, we learn to also see what isn't there. Because like you said, she didn't move off from me in a way that had big energy. It was soft. It was still in connection. She didn't swish tail to say that she wanted to change the conversation or that she didn't want to have the conversation. Those micro gestures were not present. So we learn to see what is there. And we also learn to fill in the between the lines of what is not there. And that adds the context to the communications that we're having.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's like, oh, you want to go over here? Okay. You know, and one of the things that to notice is when you start looking at your horse in a deeper way and to understand everything means something is to notice when their head lowers. If they're just at a neutral height and then they might lower their head for a moment and then they're going to walk, because it's so predictable. And you know that when a horse lowers their head, they're going to start moving. So be prepared that if you're like PJ, maybe she even lowered her head, as you might not remember, because so many things
you're
just like, yeah, she lowered her head and started walking away. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then you didn't take it personal and you're like, I need to just get your blanket off because I have other things to do. It's like, oh, okay, I'll follow your lead. So it's just a mundane thing, like doing a blanket is, that's the thing. I feel like we don't have to take the horse into an arena, into some other special place to do talking, to talk. It's like when you show up, the conversation starts. And so doing a mundane activity like blanketing or even haltering can be enriching, and it can be a different conversation. You know, I had actually this experience that was so neat when I was out in New Mexico last year, and the folks had their horses are like free ranging around the property and all these things. And so they just kind of let this horse come into the area where we were going to be working, and no backstory, which is fine, because, you know, having a backstory, you then can build some preconceived notions about an animal. And so we want, you know, one of the things that helps for us to be a good practitioner and educator is to not have much of a backstory, so we can just be present moment, here I am with this horse. And so they bring the horse in, they are carrying the halter, and I'm like, okay, so we're going to practice some lead rope things. And they presented the halter to the horse, or excuse me, I did actually, and she left. And I was like, oh, okay, this is happening. And they're like, oh yeah, by the way, like, we really have a hard time haltering this horse. And I'm like, okay. In that moment, I was like, it could have been some good information. But regardless, I think one of the things that we are able to do as practitioners is to be able to be flexible in what we're teaching. And so I'm like, okay, I want to do lead rope skills, but this horse, I can't catch her. So let's practice mirroring. And so basically what mirroring is either from a distance or skin on skin contact, touching a button, typically the shoulder. You can start with the shoulder. That's mostly the safest place to be able to do this activity. But so with this instance, I had one of the students from a distance put her palm toward the shoulder area of the horse. And I just said, follow her lead. You're just going to go where she goes, take a step when she steps, and you're just focusing on the front feet for this exercise. And to take the exercise another level, you can go to different parts of the body. You can mirror their face. You can mirror their tail, what have you. But for this particular exercise, to see if we can enrich this horse to want to put her halter on, the shoulder was the button. And so I would say it wasn't even like 3 minutes that the horse actually, I had thrown the halter on the floor because I was on the ground. I'm like, whatever, throw the halter away. We don't need it. Within 3 minutes, what she did was took the student to the halter and she bit it and she says, I'm ready now. And so I presented her the halter and she put her face right in it. And it was that easy. And so it was like listening to her and being with her in her experience, I could help her have a moment of a new thought about the halter.
Yeah. Laura, it's interesting to hear you telling that story. I've had a few similar experiences to that. And I think what I understand is if we make the conversation about the conversation that is important to the horse, which is usually safety and protection, feeling safe enough to either do a thing or be with a person, if we make the conversation about the conversation and not about the thing, then the thing becomes not a thing, right? And I know that's a kind of a funny way to say it, but if we want to halter a horse or get them in the trailer, which is such a, sometimes always, it's just a dynamically stressful event for everybody. But if we make the conversations about what's important to them in the moment, and it's usually safety and protection, and we can have them feel safe with us, then it doesn't matter if they're getting haltered or they're being asked to go on the trailer or they're being asked to move from their stall to a new paddock or, you know, any
up
point
to the mounting block.
Exactly. Yeah. If we make the mounting block about safety and protection, then we start to realize that actually it's not the object that's the problem. It's the way we feel and then they feel about the object and what that object might mean to them. It either means that I feel safe in this transaction or I don't feel safe in this transaction. And I've found that with horses that are mine and horses that are not mine and horses that maybe I have met for the first time, that if you make the conversation around something that they need satisfied, a question that they need answered, then doing the thing that you have in mind, it becomes a non-issue at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's going to be like that mindset of like, why are you having this response? Mm-hmm. May I help you? And mm-hmm. that's one of the beautiful things that I love about what we're offering in our educational system of learning the nonverbal language of horses through Horsepeak, is not like being like feeling shame about yourself for one, right? Like, why won't my horse do this thing? I'm such a bad horse trainer. Two, taking it to an account that the horse may or may not have had what we've seen actually through a lot of the experiences with the horses that we meet is that they're trained up really fast and they might not actually mentally understand the meaning of something. And so it'd be like, oh, you're struggling with the mounting block. Let me help you have a different experience with that. And we talk about using a clothesline of experiences. So goal is line horse up to the mounting block in a nice, calm manner, and they want to be there. And so then going backwards and be like, how many different micro lessons can I create going backwards to be able to have my goal of lining my horse up to the mounting block without them swinging their butt away, or what all the different shenanigans that can happen at the mounting block. And taking, you know, one of the things, if you have a thing, whatever thing is going on with your horse, just take an afternoon and be like, how can I reverse engineer this? The saddle pad, the mounting block, the cross ties, the whole thing. And then take into account, like PJ was saying, with the blanketing experience. Oh, this mounting block is at the edge of a hill, which then could create a sense of predators coming or something. There's so many, like, why don't you like this? Is this actually in a bad location? Or horses that are on a cross tie, they might be upset because a horse behind them is giving them stink eye and pinning their ears. And they're like, I don't want to be here because they're yelling at me right now. So it's like, why are they doing this thing?
Yeah. And I think that's a really good kind of bottom line, is to be with our horses in curiosity. Mm-hmm. And to not be offended personally by a no thank you that you might get from your horse, and to just try to get under the hood of that a little bit, right? And see, well, why is this happening? Why might you have said no thank you, or just a big hard no?
Yeah.
There is a reason. There's always mm-hmm. a reason. If they're building anxiety because of a request that you're making, then we are their caretakers. And they might enjoy their job once they get to it, or they might not. And if they don't, then we have some things to figure out, right? Yeah. And we have the ability to build skills within ourselves to be able to communicate with them better. And if we can do with that in curiosity, everybody wins, right? We have a better understanding. We build a better partnership or relationship or companionship with our equines. And they feel more trusting in that because they understand that we're going to come to them with curiosity, not with demands. And if something isn't going or feeling right to us, then we can kind of get under that and figure out why, from the horse's perspective, did they not feel safe or not act in a compliant way to a request. And oftentimes we find that it might be in the way we're asking. It might be with our intention. It might be that we are moving too quickly for them to feel safe. It might be that we are coming to them with a lot of core pressure and they just need us to have our core belly buttons, flashlights, however we want to say that, off them at the moment when we're saddling our horse. Sometimes horses are uncomfortable with saddling process because we have so much big core energy when we're putting the saddle on. And it's a process of discovery. And if we can enter it with curiosity and a little bit of joy, that process is really, can be really fun for both horse and human.
Absolutely. And that's, with these processes that we explore, it's like, I'm going to experiment today. Mm-hmm. I'm going to experiment with this thing. And it's just choosing one thing is really a good idea to start noticing, because we can put so much pressure on ourselves, especially in the process of learning something new, then in feeling frustrated, like, why don't I understand this? Or I want my horse to do this and what have you. And it's just like, give yourself a break and be with what is happening and be curious about the experience. You know, I wanted to bring in one quote from Dr. Stephen Porges, because we're talking about next episode, we're going to talk about zero. And you kept bringing in, though, the safety and protection messages. And that's a whole nother topic of values that we have for horses to have, keep learning from their perspective of what their needs, wants, and desires are. And so this is his quote. If you want to improve the world, start by making people feel safer. And so that's really what we're practicing with horse speak, is if my horse, like, horses love food. Everyone really knows that, right? And I have observed, because I use hay nets to feed out the horses. And if on any given day, especially if I put them on the far fence line, if my protector horse, Rocky, isn't in the pen, 9 times out of 10, those girls will not go to that far fence line because they don't feel safe. First thing in the morning, winter time, it's cold. Their resource is just across the paddock. They won't go there. And so then I can go and do safety and protection messages, or I can just make it easy on everybody. And I can also just move the food. So it's really interesting to notice if your horse maybe not eating for some reason. And I've been loving that experimenting. And so we're going to talk about safety objects in the future. And so I was moving objects around to help them feel safer, because it's profound to see a horse admire an object and see it as, this thing actually helps me feel a little bit calmer, or a little bit safer. So it's, you know, for a horse to not eat, that means there's really something going on.
Absolutely. And especially if we can, again, pay attention to observing micro gestures, and maybe that horse is looking with a sensory posture, and that will clue us into that they're looking for some messages about safety because they're sensing something isn't safe.
Yeah. And with the girls and the food on the far fence line, there are a line of cedar trees that are right at the fence line. So then there can be different critters in there. There could be, you know, all different things could be roaming around in there, versus the other fence lines that are open to the other paddocks, or the other one is open to the road, and they will easily go to the roadside if Rocky isn't in there being their protector. But it's most of the time they will not go out there by themselves without Rocky. And the cool thing too, though, is I could, and I have stepped in. It depends on the day and how much time I have to help them feel safe and be like, no, really, you should eat on this fence line. Me being human, this is the good place to eat, you know? So it's really neat that we can fill in a protector role and protect our horses.
I had an interesting experience with my Icelandic gelding, who is very much a protector. And when I first got him to my property 3 years ago, he and I had a lot of conversations about who is the protector. And I really feel like his coming from a herd of Icelandics, and I don't know his story in Iceland, but he came from Iceland. But I can understand from his behaviors and his gestures, postures, and signals that he felt himself, he's taking on that role of being the protector. He has a corner that is the highest part of the paddock that he stands in and looks out over miles of Colorado that he can see distance scanning. And, you know, anything at all going on, he's got his head perked up and he's pointed in that direction, not in a frantic way, but in an alerting way. And a couple of months ago, I had someone come out doing some equine body work for my horses, and his turn had been first. And so when he was finished, he came out into the paddock space, and I was just hanging out with him. And so he's in a, after his body work, of course, he, if any of you have had horses who've had body work, you know, they're in a soft place, they're relaxed, their tension is released, they just kind of feel softer and maybe a little bit vulnerable. So I was hanging out in the paddock space with him, and it was a sunny afternoon. So I went over to the fence line and I kind of sat down on from within the paddock on that third, the lowest fence rail. So I'm kind of tucked in between the second and third fence rail, and I'm sitting there. And he came over to me and he bumped my knee with his nose, and he lipped at my shoe with his teeth, and he went over, marched over to the opposite fence rail and put his shoulder on it. And so what he was saying to me is that you don't seem safe, and you are taking the fence line saying you're the protector, but you're low and you're in a vulnerable position, and I'm feeling soft and vulnerable right now. You're saying you're acting as protector, but you can't possibly, because you're sitting down low. Wow. And you're not standing in a protector stance. And so I'm going to go over to the other fence line and I'm going to be the protector. So we had about a 5-minute conversation. I heard what he said and I apologized to him. I said, I'm just resting. But he said, I'm resting. I'm feeling vulnerable. And if you're going to act as protector, I need you to do the job, not just say you're doing the job. And so we had a little conversation and I went over to the fence line where he had his shoulder on the fence line. And I checked in with him, which again, girls and guys, we're going to talk about all these, the buttons and the, and
there's
the
so
terms
much to
later
talk
on.
About.
There's so much to talk about, but I emphasized that I was being the protector for him and I was ready and able to do that job. And when I was able to convince him with my micro gestures and my gestures, postures and signals that I was ready to do that protector role for him, only then did he step off and actually lower his head and kind of have a little rest and a nap about that. But very much so, like you said, Laura, they need to feel safe and protected in their environment, even if it's the same environment they're in all the time. Things mm-hmm. change, right? Smells yep. change. Bears and coyotes walk through. Their food is on a fence line where they can't see well beyond to know if something might come through very quickly. And they look to somebody for that protector role. And like you said, if Rocky's not in the paddock at the moment and there's no you or Sharon out there doing that role. And for my horse, I was saying I'm going to be the protector, but I was doing it in a way that did not make sense to him and wasn't believable. So I had to re-up that a little bit and go be very intentional in my messaging for him to then move off and be able to relax further.
Yeah. And you know, that's, you're in the environment with him. So then you're 100% on. That's the thing that you, if you are claiming the fence, and we'll talk about that too, and how important that message is. And so he's like, yeah, lady, you're sitting down on the job. I can't
exactly
have this.
I was sitting down on the job. And he's a tough boss. He's yeah. not going to let me sit down yeah. on the job.
There's no resting here. So, and it, that's the thing. If you wanted to go and chill, you could go outside the fence and then exactly. you swish your tail and I'm going to go outside the fence. I'm going to chill out here. And so then you're out of the conversation at that right. time. So yeah, that's really, that's such a fun story. I appreciate that so much. And you know, there's so much to learning horse speak, and we are touching upon a lot of different topics during this talk. And one thing that I was thinking about as you were talking about the protector role, and then also noticing what they're noticing, and we teach this in the book, is the sentry message. And so horses do notice their environment as being a prey animal. They are 100% aware of everything that's going on, including you. Even if you think that the horse isn't necessarily looking at you, they're looking at you.
Because they're also a social species and yeah. they need to know that everybody's on the same page about everything.
Right. And that's like, you were in the conversation, you're in the environment, therefore you are kind of a hazard, you know, like we have to be safe and stuff. So what the bottom line is, when we notice our horse is looking at something, don't just say, come on, horse, like, let's go and do the thing. Acknowledge what they're looking at. Be like, what is that? Do lift the bridge of your nose. Be like, question, what is that? And then we can assess, be like, looks like everything is okay. We can lick and chew, lower our head. And well, we can just do a little swish tail with our hand, or even out loud, we can say swish tail. We don't have to worry about that anymore. And when you do your swish tail, and you can't see this on the podcast, but it's going to go down by your thigh, and you are going to do one, one, two. It's a slow, rhythmic swish tail. We're not doing that. It's not a frantic, like, agitated tail. It's just really calm. And saying, we can let go of what's going on. And the one main feature of this message is also, you need to be believable. Sometimes you may not be like, oh, this sounds silly, I've swished my tail at some spooky thing. You know, if you put that energy into it, the horse isn't going to believe you. And the other thing is, if they're not letting go of their sentry and looking at the spot they're looking at, then maybe there actually is something that's over there that they really are concerned about. And we are, you know, we're just look at our, you know, what's in front of us, and they're seeing basically, you know, almost all the way around their entire body. So their heightened sense is so much deeper than ours. And so therefore it's then take it out, go and be the protector, be like, okay, you know what? I'm going to let you go in this moment. If that's the case, if you can, like, where you're in the paddock or something, you can be like, all right, you know what, horse, I'm going to walk in that direction and I'm going to go with the fence line and check it out for you. So, like, taking their safety into the number one priority when you're with your horse it's so crucial to helping them be with you. Because if the house is on fire, the conversation stops. You need to get the heck out of the house.
Exactly. And as you're talking, Laura, is that I'm kind of thinking back to when you were talking about one of our club members, Foals Nyota, and her mama, and all the conversations we've been able to view in those club member videos. It all goes back to those first true conversations between the mare and the foal. It's all about how do we remain safe? How do we move together? How far is too far to be, how close is too close to be in certain contexts of conversation, and just really having that foal learn how to mirror the mother's movements, so that in a moment they don't have to problem solve how to move together. They're kind of problem solving all the time. And then once a reason becomes evident that they do need to move quickly, they're ready to do that because they've practiced it all along. And I think if we are mindful to practice small things with our horses all the time that we're with them, it's not training, it's conversation, so that we're always in a conversation and we always got to understand each other. We've got the dialogue open. And that way, if something large does happen, there really is a bear running through your paddock, you've had these conversations over lots of time in small ways. And
when the house is not on fire.
When the house is not on fire, you've done all your fire drills, right? You've done problem solving. You've planned ahead. You know the evacuation route. You know what's in your backpack to take with you. And so in these moments that it becomes reality, it's much more safe because you've already practiced it all along the way in small doses.
Absolutely. And, you know, with that, it just also makes me think of these beautiful videos. Thank you to Gwen and Jim for filming all of these. So it's shout out to our club members who brought in these videos, and to then see the integration into the herd, because it was just Mama and Nyota at first, but then it was like Nyota and Mama in with the elder horses, and to see how they did, it's a healthy family system. Like, they are trying to have zero calm within all things that are going on. And so if you see a horse running, it's like, why are they running? What happened? They're not, you know, typically are not running for play. Horses have different personalities, and some horses may want to be a little bit more playful, but whenever it's a why, from the horse peak perspective of like, why are they running? Is there a scary thing happening? So right. it's so interesting to see with the integration happen when the mare, mama, and baby were in a certain location, and then the other protector came in and had to be like, nope, we can't stay here. We all have to move away. And to watch the precision of the body language, the nonverbal language that the horses are doing with each other in those videos, it's just such a great teaching tool. And with that being said, PJ, I really appreciate your time today and talking about what is horse speak with us. And we invite you that you could have the tools to understand your horse in a different way and to resolve any challenges that you might be having with your horse from their perspective, with precise communication that will create a mutually consistent and safe and enduring relationship. We look forward to talking to you again. And if you like what you're hearing, hit like on the YouTube channel, subscribe, go to SharonWilsey.com, go to HorseSpeakAcademy.com. We have online learning, we have DVD, we have many books, we have many different ways to learn horse speak, as well as private consultations. And for whatever learning style you have as an individual person, we have a way to learn this language system, the nonverbal language, horse speak. And also, don't forget, you can meet us live in person too. So thank you for listening and have a great rest of your day.
Go see, be with, and enjoy your horses.
All right. Cheers.
Thanks, Laura. Bye.
Thank you, PJ.